His eyes shone like bonfires when he took the torch. One by one, each of the sellswords unsheathed one of his knives and laid it on the body of their comrade. The Qadari was last. He drew his short sword, twirled it once, and laid it on his chest with the blade pointing at his feet. One of the others said a prayer under his breath, too quiet to make out the words. Randall lingered for a moment.
Suranim ta'ash bataban, Elazim.
Then he gave it the torch. What is up, you guys? Welcome back to another episode. Where we last left off, we met Pharos, a low-rent smuggler carrying a shipment of prisoners down to the Hinter to do a deal with the Free Nation. If you missed last episode or any other, I will leave a link to the full playlist down in the episode description, along with links to a couple of recap videos that you can use to get a sense of where we are in the story. Alright, let's get down to the good stuff. I'll catch you at the end of the episode. I'm Josh Call, and this is Las Colosseum. Two wives and a patch of dirt out east. That's what was on the goatherd's belt. His skull throbbed. Screams and clashing steel rang out all around him. He cracked an eyelid and saw the bandit's long axe flash as he chopped the boy's head down the middle. Pharos flinched. He rolled onto his side and spat blood in the dirt. The tip of his tongue was hanging on by a flap of skin. He found the knife that the boy had kicked over and crawled toward the nag. His own stiletto was trapped under Bluebeard's elephantine corpse. He could keep it. He'd made a decision during the long wait for the second wagon, as the slavers had gone about sharpening their weapons and Bluebeard had told him all the delightfully wicked things he'd do to Pharos if the other wagon never showed. Smuggling wasn't for him. Not anymore. He was going to take the rocks and see what he could get for them at a hawk shop, not at the edge and not all at once, but two or three at a time until he had enough crowns for a new start, forget his name and die fat and happy. He'd probably need to go farther than Southreach, he reflected. It was a little too close to home in case Master White came after him. He'd heard that they grew rice and sugarcane down in the Ultenmire. The swamplands were like the snotty nostrils at the tip of the snout. It was far enough from any great cities to be nearly lawless. If you made nice with the river pirates, a man could virtually disappear there. Aye, a couple of wives and a new life as a swamp farmer. Not quite as glamorous as a ranch in Southreach, but it would suit him just fine. He gingerly peeled himself off the hard pan and hugged the side of the nag, praying she didn't kick him in the head coming up. That would be just his luck, wouldn't it?
Easy beauty,
he crooned, massaging the side of her neck. He fumbled with a sack hanging from a hook on the passenger side and found one of the apples he'd saved to give her once they reached Mudwater. She stopped straining once he slipped it to her. Her tongue was thick and warm against his palm.
That's it,
talking made his mouth hurt.
I'll give you a whole bleeding bushel once we're out of here.
He kept on murmuring as he sawed through her traces with the boy's knife. Her ears were stiff and flat against her skull. He glanced around to make sure there was no one about to pounce on him. His gaze alighted momentarily on the corpse of the boy, the haft of the long axe jutting up out of him at an angle. His stomach knotted, and Pharos studiously avoided looking at his face. He didn't see the bandit, and for half an instant he thought someone was going to ambush him from behind. Behind the wagon, he heard the rattle of chains and the sort of steady grunting you only ever heard in brothels and fighting pits. He left them to it. He made himself as small as he could and slipped around to the other side, hoping the spooked horse wouldn't try to take a bite out of him. He tried to ignore the screams, the clashing steel, the stench of blood and the clay that had been churned into a red mud sucking at his heels. He looked at his boots and saw a dead man gaping up at him, his eyes like marbles on a crimson mask. His split skull shone terribly white through the gash in his brow. A moment later, Pharos saw the black bundle that had been his turban, crushed and muddy. The goatherd gagged and bit his fist. He'd liked the young Qadari by the end, at least before he'd fouled up the original deal, and now got himself killed for the trouble. It was good that Pharos had decided to take the rocks and run. He was a walking dead man at the edge. Master White would want answers and then retribution, never mind that none of this was Pharos's fault. On the bright side, he might not even have to worry about White coming after him, depending on whether it was the slavers or the leather-clad cutthroats who survived the night. There were all manner of predators and scavengers on the Hinter. Who's to say the goat herd hadn't been dragged off by a cat? He could be through the gates at first light and on a wagon headed east before breakfast. By the time White heard about the slaughter on the Hardpan, if he ever did, Pharos could be halfway to Aerling. He stowed his knife and snapped the frayed leather trace. The nag lurched forward and Pharos nearly lost her.
Hold on, you silly bitch,
he snarled and threw himself across her back. He twisted into a sitting position and found the reins. The nag's frantic pulse thudded against his bits, but maybe that was his own. He dug his heels into her flanks, and they took off like a bow shot. He felt eyes on his back as they lurched out of the ring of dim light into the dark. Over the thunder of her hooves, he heard a momentary caesura in the clashing steel like an intake of breath. He was grateful for the heavy, pregnant clouds burying the moon overhead, for already he was all but invisible against the dark horizon. Even so, he imagined one of the cutthroats running out to the edge of the killing ground, squinting into the black, taking careful aim with his crossbow. He glanced over his shoulder at their silhouettes dancing in the torchlight, their shadows long and rippling on the uneven ground. He never saw the gully. Neither did the nag. He heard her scream first. She hit the gully, and her legs snapped like a bit of kindling. He felt it in his groin, but only for a moment, for she went down hard on her forelegs, and the next moment he was flying. Goose flesh rose on his arms as the Hardpan rose to meet him. He felt his face crunch into the crust, then nothing. The first thing he became aware of was pain, and that meant he wasn't dead. His ear throbbed. There was something cold and hard pressed against his cheek like a block of ice, something sharp digging into his collar. Lee cracked his eyes and saw only half of the gray-black sky. The other half was a sheet of fire reflected on the axe head embedded in his face. No, not his face. The long axe was sunk halfway to the shoulder in the clay, close enough to graze his cheek coming down, close enough to pin his dark hair to the crust. He tried to pull away. The pain in his ear flared bright through his whole body, and he nearly faded again. He waited for the pain to ebb before trying again. He gingerly worked the axe head loose with one hand, then rolled away. He half expected to see the bandit standing over him, reaching for the haft to finish the job, but there was no one. He heard a strangled cry and a rattle of chains behind the wagon. He reached for the haft of the long axe, then thought better of it. He found a rock that was about the size of his fist and tapered to a nub on one end. He white-knuckled it and crept around to the back of the wagon. The bandit's face was swollen and purple, his eyes bloodshot and bulging. Veins throbbed in his neck and temple. He thrashed and clawed at the chain that was twisting ever tighter around his throat. The prisoner who was strangling him still had the sackcloth over his head. He grunted and gasped, the muscles of his scarred arms standing out like ropes. He ignored the bandit, punching him, clawing at him with dirty fingernails. The other prisoners gaped stupidly. The ones without the burlap lay flat on the ground to make themselves as small a target as possible. At least one had caught a stray crossbow bolt in the shoulder and was howling as he tried to pull it out. The outlaw's wild, rolling eyes found the thief, and he reached a desperate hand for him, his fingertips raw and bleeding. The prisoner yanked the chain tighter, and swollen capillaries burst around his eyes. A dark shape sidled up next to Lee. It was one of Randall's, holding a crossbow in one hand. He leveled it and squeezed. The quarrel punched through the slaver's face and turned his eyes to glass. His outstretched hand dropped onto his own chest, still twitching. One of the other prisoners retched. Vomit dribbled through the holes in his burlap. The one who'd killed the bandit tossed the corpse off of himself and stood up. Lee felt his eyes on him through the sackcloth. The sellsword was already gone, and Lee followed him into the circle of torchlight. Sticky mud seeped through the holes in his boots and nearly peeled the sole off of one of them. There were bodies everywhere. The stench of blood and shit and bile burned Lee's nostrils. The Kadari was splattered with all of it. His chest was heaving, and sweat gleamed on his brow. His short sword squelched as he unstuck it from the dead man kneeling in front of him. For the first time since he'd killed Bluebeard, but for the rattle of chains and the whimper of the shot prisoner, there was silence.
Are we all alive?
Several eyes chorused back as the other sellswords emerged from the gloom, all of them streaked with mud and blood. Randall's jaw tightened.
Mohad, Alakhwaza.
One of the others cursed. He was looking behind one of the wagons. He looked sick. Randall and the others ran to the other side.
No, no, no.
The young Qadari was minutes dead. His skull was cleaved down the middle, his no-color eyes staring sightless in different directions. Randall knelt in front of him and lowered his eyelids. He held Mohad's limp hand in both of his. The Qadari's shoulders shook with silent sobs. The others stood by respectfully with their heads bowed and their hands clasped. The cries of an injured horse rolled across the hard pan and made goose flesh rise on Lee's arms. Randall looked up, his eyes shining, and with a wordless flick of his fingers, he sent one of the others to take a look. Lee followed, and behind him he heard one of the sellsword's boots crunch in the dirt as he crouched down beside the Qadari.
What do you want us to do with the rest? He murmured. Kill them,
Randall said through his teeth. The screams that echoed out of the bandit camp were worse than the horse. Much worse. Lee bit his cheeks and balled his fists and tried to focus on the ache in his ear rather than on what was happening behind him.
What was any of this for, if...
His foot plunged into a hidden gully and he nearly went sprawling. Up ahead, the horse was an organic lump among the scrubby bushes. She arched her neck and cried a long, shrill note. The mercenary who was leading the thief by a few paces drew his short sword. The blade flashed. Lee looked up alongside him, the smell of hot blood thick on the still air. He pointed.
There.
There was another lumpy shape half hidden by shrubs a few paces away. They grabbed the unconscious man by his shoulders and dragged him into a rough sitting position with his back against one of the mean little trees that managed to survive the desert. The bald man's nose was mashed flat and bleeding, and pebbles were embedded in his ruddy cheek. The sellsword grabbed the bald man's nose and twisted. The man howled, his bloodshot eyes snapping open.
Pharos, the sellsword murmured. That's your name, isn't it? Pharos?
Please, the bald man gasped. Please, you don't want to do this. I've got a wife and sons and...
No, you don't.
The smuggler's spluttered pleas faltered. The sellsword stared at him for a long moment, still squatting on his hunkers, their faces a handbreadth apart. He had hard, angular features that were flattened by the near darkness and a dusting of black beard.
You're being dismissed from your post. Do you understand?
Sure, sure. Been getting too cramped at the edge anyway. Been thinking about trying me luck out on the snout.
The sellsword grabbed him by the nose again and twisted. The bald man screeched. The sellsword swatted his hands away as the smuggler tried to push him off.
Please, please!
He relented, and the bald man buckled over, wheezing. He fumbled with a heavy leather pouch on his belt and tossed it in the dirt.
Look, look, take the stones. You don't have to kill me. I won't talk.
He raised his trembling hands.
I won't talk.
The sellsword picked up the pouch and teased it open. He pulled one out. It was ugly and colorless, almost black in the near darkness.
A man could start over with this, he murmured, rolling it between his fingers. A new life, far away.
He dropped it in the pouch and pulled the string tight. The smuggler flinched when the sellsword grabbed him by the wrist and slapped the pouch into his hand.
Look at me, Pharos. I'm giving you a second chance to disappear. And if you ever come back, if you ever even see the jaw on the horizon, I will come. And I will take those stones off of your corpse, and you'll die slow. Do you understand?
The bald man shuddered.
Say you understand.
I understand.
The sellsword stood.
10.
Pharos looked up.
What?
9.
The bald man cursed and scrambled to his feet.
8?
He didn't count further. The smuggler was off and running north as fast as his stumpy little legs could carry him. They watched him go. He tripped and fell twice before he was swallowed up by the night. Randall's man turned. Lee was looking at him questioningly. The sellsword shrugged and brushed past the thief.
Kingmaker.
Lee grit his teeth and padded after him toward the bandit camp, wondering whether the fate the spider had decided for him was the same as that of the smuggler or of the outlaws. He glanced over his shoulder at the infinite dark where the bald man had gone, at the pinprick glimmer a league to the north. The safer bet was to run. He was trailing behind the sellsword. He probably wouldn't notice that the thief had stopped following until he was back at the camp. If Lee was really clever, he'd cut south, hide out, and watch the sellswords go hunting for him in the other direction. He was still considering this when a voice from the camp caught him, carried across the hardpan on the still air.
"You did all this for me."
It was like being splashed in the face with cold water. Lee stopped. He knew that voice.
"This is the least of it," came the reply of one of the mercenaries. "You should see what he did at the edge."
The wagons parted as Lee followed the sellsword into the camp. The dead, slavers and prisoners both, were in a heap at the outer edge of the circle of torchlight. Randall and the two others were emptying the outlaw's covered wagon, tossing sacks of oats and hardtack into the red mud behind them. The young Qadari had been wrapped in a makeshift shroud of blood-stained cloaks and lay on a dry patch of clay that hadn't been churned into sucking mud. There was one figure standing in the middle of the camp who hadn't come down with them. He was wearing dirty breeches and a threadbare shirt, both caked in mud from wrestling the slaver. He was barefoot, and his wrists were scabbed and bleeding, but unchained. His back was to the thief, and without the sack covering his head, his shaved skull shone in the torchlight. He was facing the corpses, nearly a score of them, piled high for the scavengers.
"The smuggler is headed north with the stones," said the sellsword, stepping into the clearing ahead of Lee. "Says he fancies starting over on the snout." "I've got a crown, says he never makes it there," replied one of the others, who was holding back the flap on the covered wagon as Randall moved the young Qadari's body off the hardpan.
The sellsword glanced at his captain, and his face fell.
"Sorry. Why leave him alive?"
Lee heard himself say, his boots squelching in the mud. The freedman hadn't turned away from the bodies, but with his back to them, he rasped.
"He has to blame this on someone."
Lee's throat tightened. The freedman's voice was barely more than a hoarse murmur, but it sent a fresh wave of goose flesh coursing down Lee's arms. He tried to say the name, but it stuck in his throat. The mud clutched at his boot heels as he ran across the camp. The figure didn't look until he felt Lee's fingers on the back of his collar. His features were all mashed and swollen. One sharp tug and the thin as cobwebs fabric tore away in a single strip. The wings, faded gray, their delicate lines just beginning to smudge with age, rippled as he moved. He turned and looked the thief full in the face.
"You could have just asked,"
Haytham said. Lee almost sobbed. He threw his arms around the brawler's middle and squeezed him tight. Haytham hissed, the muscles of his stomach tightening, and Lee immediately pulled away, blushing furiously.
"Sorry," he muttered. I just... How is this possible?
He looked back at the mercenary who'd threatened Pharos.
"Kingmaker."
The sellsword nodded.
"Kingmaker,"
the brawler agreed.
"But I thought..."
Lee's heart was racing, and his vision swam. He found it difficult to reconcile this Haytham standing before him from the one with glass eyes and dripping head.
"I saw you die,"
he said in a small, awed voice. Haytham's jaw tightened, and his eyes flicked to Randall's man. Before the mercenary could reply, the Qadari's voice broke in.
"He's ready."
"I'll explain later,"
Lee muttered as they followed the others to the outlaw's wagon. With what remained of Haytham's shirt falling off him in scraps, Lee noticed that one of his shoulders was out of joint, the skin around the bony nub mottled with bruises. He wondered how much it had hurt to pull the slaver off of Lee and strangle him.
"You saved my life,"
he murmured. Haytham looked back.
"Nobody gets to kill you but me."
Lee caught himself smiling.
"So I guess that makes it what, me three, you one?"
The brawler motioned to Lee's face.
"Looks like I wasn't quite quick enough."
He remembered the ache in his ear, and gingerly he reached for the side of his head. His fingertips grazed the wound, and pain flashed through him again. Haytham threw a hand out and caught him by the shoulders to steady him. The axe had missed his skull by a hair's breadth, but besides the ragged haircut it had given him, the stroke had also taken off a sliver of his ear. He could feel it, about an inch long and sticky wet with blood, still hanging on gamely by the tiniest bit of skin. Lee held his hair back, taking care not to graze his bloody stump, and asked,
"Do you think anyone will notice?"
Haytham snorted and shook his head. He looked like he was going to say something, but by then they'd reached the somber little semicircle around the back of the covered wagon. The young sellsword's body had been laid inside, surrounded by bedrolls and bits of dry brush, anything that would burn. Randall had picked over the slaver's effects for grog, whiskey, lamp oil, and now he doused the body, the bedrolls, the canvas covering, all of it. It dripped between the planks and off the back axle, and Lee wondered whether the whole hinter wouldn't burn when they gave it the torch. "Won't someone see?" He nodded to the twinkling pinpricks that marked the villages.
"Let them."
Randall's face had that inscrutable deep water expression. His eyes shone like bonfires when he took the torch. One by one, each of the sellswords unsheathed one of his knives and laid it on the body of their comrade. The Qadari was last. He drew his short sword, twirled it once, and laid it on his chest with the blade pointing at his feet. One of the others said a prayer under his breath, too quiet to make out the words. Randall lingered for a moment.
Suranim ta'ashbataban, Elazim.
Then he gave it the torch. Flames raced across the body and up the sides of the oil-soaked canvas. They licked the sky, dancing 15 feet in the air, and sent sparks like torch bugs hurtling up into the black. The heat buffeted them like a fist. Lee and the others all stumbled back a step or two as their faces instantly dampened with sweat. Only Randall didn't retreat, and for a moment Lee thought his whiskey-slick leathers would catch. When he finally did, he joined the others in a wider semicircle some 10 paces from the pyre. Lee remembered the flask in his pocket, and they passed it around. Only Randall didn't drink. To Lee, it seemed that he was far away, across the desert maybe, watching the flames dance from other pyres for other comrades. He wondered if this was how they honored their dead where he came from. They told stories.
"He was a good kid,"
muttered one of the sellswords, passing the empty flask back to Lee.
"Wicked with those knives. I'll tell you, if that's how they make them down south, I don't know how we're all not speaking Qadari right now."
The others murmured in agreement.
"He always kept an even keel. He was with us, how long? 3 years. Don't think I ever saw him lose his temper. Gave as good as he got, too. I think I saw him drop 3 before they got him. No, it weren't 3, it was 5.
"Sure, sure," the sellsword amended.
"An easy 5, at least."
Randall hadn't said anything. Lee looked at him.
"What is Kafasa?"
The other sellswords all looked sharply at him. The Qadari cocked an eyebrow.
"You said it to Bluebeard."
He gestured to his chin.
"Kafasa, what does it mean?"
The spider's man hesitated.
"It means, Beetle."
The one who'd gone with him to Pharaoh said brightly. Now they all looked at him. He shrugged and motioned to the pyre.
"Mohad told me."
For a moment, no one said anything. Then Randall laughed, and they all did. Even Hatham, who winced and clutched his ribs as he did, but he kept on laughing. It felt good to laugh. Lee couldn't remember the last time he had. It was better than tears, better than stories, and he thought he saw a glimmer of gratitude in Randall's eyes before he turned his face back to the fire. Thank you guys so much for listening. It really is a joy to be able to share this entire story with you. As always, it is a huge help if you leave a like or a comment on the video. And if you're catching this on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, you can do me a favor by leaving a 5-star review. That really allows this story to reach as many people as possible. All right, that is enough out of me. I will catch you all next week. Same time, same place. I'll see you then.